Good morning, everyone, and thank you for being here this morning. I know it's a Saturday and it's a nice day outside, but I really appreciate everybody coming to participate in the conference today, and it's my pleasure to come and share some information with all of you. My name is Jamie Ray Leonetti. I am an attorney with the Pennsylvania Client Assistance Program, which is a statewide advocacy program designed to help people with all types of disabilities who are trying to get services from the Office of Vocational Rehabilitation, what you might know as OVR, Centers for Independent Living, or CILS, and a few other programs that get some money under Title I of the Rehabilitation Act. So if you're dealing with any of those programs and you need some assistance, you can feel free to give me a call or give one of the other advocates in my office a call, and we would be more than glad to help you. Just for reference, if you're looking at your big binder that you got as part of the conference materials, my information is under tab 3, just to make it really easy for you to contact me if you have a question later on and you need to get a hold of me. Now, the first thing I'm supposed to do here this morning is to provide you with some kind of introduction. But while I was sitting in the plenary session that we had this morning, I kind of changed what I wanted to do in that regard because I decided that it would be important to share with you, especially the young people that are here, a personal story about how it is that I actually became a lawyer. So here we go. I decided that I wanted to be a lawyer when I was around 11, which I know is a little bit unusual. Somebody might not decide on their career goal at that age, but in fact, that's what happened to me. And I tried to pursue different things. I mean, when you're 11, you obviously can't get a job. But I would try to volunteer, and my grandmother had a lawyer that she always used, and he would let me do some volunteer little things in his office, filing and things like that. And so I kind of kept this goal alive in that way. And so then I got to be around 16 or so, and I happen to be a person who has cerebral palsy. And so I'm in the doctor's office one day for my yearly, check-in with the people at Hershey Medical Center, And I said something about this goal that I had of becoming a lawyer, because now I'm 16 and I really got to be thinking about this. I got to plan for college and all these things. So this doctor, who I've never seen before in my life, because every time you go to Hershey Medical Center, you see somebody different, takes a good, hard look at me and says, "Well, gee, I think that that is a really lofty goal for somebody like you, somebody with cerebral palsy, and I think you really need to think about that." Well, I thought about that for about 1 minute, and I looked at my mom and I said, "Mom, I think that I really need to talk to you outside." And I grabbed my stuff and we went in the hall and I said, "Mom, I can't be in there with this guy. You got to find me somebody else." And my mom listened to that and she got me out of there. And that was the last I thought of that. So all I can tell you is that if anybody, I don't care who it is, ever looks at you and you're telling them what you want to do with your life and they tell you that that's too lofty of a goal, or that's ridiculous, or any of that garbage, you just get out of there, because that's not where you need to be. Now, enough said about that. Let me get to what I'm really supposed to be talking about today. And what I can talk about, because I didn't listen to that guy, okay? You guys are here because you want to learn something about reasonable accommodations and how you can get those accommodations if you are in a job setting, if you're at the workplace, okay? You need to know a little bit of background first, and I'm just going to go over that background fairly quickly so we can get into the real life examples. There are certain laws that are going to protect you as you move from high school into the working world. And I'm going to go over briefly some of those laws today. The first one, probably the biggest one, is the Americans with Disabilities Act, or what we are now calling the Americans with Disabilities Act Amendments Act. Because the law had some amendments placed on it that went into effect January 1st of 2009. Okay. The second law that you may hear a lot about and need to deal with in your work life is called the Rehabilitation Act of 1973. And the last one, I'm just assuming that everybody here is from Pennsylvania. Is there anybody that doesn't live in Pennsylvania? Okay. The last one is the Pennsylvania Human Relations Act, which is a state law instead of a federal law. Okay. Now, the ADA Amendments Act, what does it do? Well, it does a lot of things. One big thing that it does is provide protections at work to people who have disabilities. Okay. But a big question is, who has a disability? Now, this is a very sticky issue, and I'm not going to go into it in great detail here because for purposes of this workshop, we're going to assume that anybody who's here and listening and trying to get this information is somebody who meets that definition of being disabled. Okay? But I'm going to tell you something really important about the ADA Amendments Act. When Congress got the idea to make amendments to the Americans with Disabilities Act, the ADA, the main reason they decided to make those changes was because they didn't like the way the courts were interpreting what it means to be disabled. They thought that the courts were being way too strict, way too narrow, and really cutting out individuals, people who were intended to get the protections of the ADA. And because of that, they went back, and you'll see a handout that you have in my materials that talks about the ADA. And one of the big things that they did was they said, look, in order for you to have a disability, you don't have to be completely unable to do a particular task or a particular job. Okay, that's really what the direction that the courts were going in. You just have to be limited in some way. And we want to make that question, that hurdle that you have to jump over, we really want to make that easy. So I'm here to tell you that, you know, Congress has tried to improve the law for people with disabilities. Now, we're not sure how that's going to play out because these amendments are so new that we haven't seen a lot of court cases under the new amendments yet, but we're keeping our fingers crossed. And we're hoping that all of you are going to be somebody who's protected under that law. Okay? Now, I'm going to talk briefly about the Rehabilitation Act because that's the act that a lot of you might be dealing with. If you choose to go to the Office of Vocational Rehabilitation to try to get services. Is there anybody here who's never heard of OVR before, the Office of Vocational Rehabilitation? Okay, great. Okay, so OVR, as you all probably know, is the state agency that gets federal funding to provide you with services that may help you to get or keep a job or to advance in your job. Okay? Now, what a lot of people come to me and say they don't know is that OVR is actually a place where you can get some reasonable accommodations and some assistive technology, if that's what you need, to help you out in the workplace. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that as we go through the program today. Okay. Is there anybody that just wants to share, and I'm not trying to put anybody on the spot, but is there anybody who thinks that they have a good working definition of what a reasonable accommodation is? I'm not talking about the legal definition. I'm talking about what it really means when you need one and you want to go out there and use it. Anybody got any ideas? Yes, ma'am. But wait till somebody runs you a microphone, okay? There we go.
Reasonable accommodation would be if you had difficulty accessing a building, for instance, but they were able to provide your station in a place where you could have ready access to it. They wouldn't have to change the essential job, just maybe relocate the setup so that you could reach it.
Okay, I think that's an excellent example, and I think we can call that relocation. Anybody else?
I believe that a reasonable accommodation would be that they would be able to have people that would support somebody with a disability. Above all, be caring and knowing what the person's abilities were and, of course, the limitations, and be able to assist that person achieve his daily, monthly, or yearly goal.
Okay, I'm going to call that two things. One thing I'm going to call it is supports, and the other thing I'm going to call it is a job coach. Anybody else?
Yes, I knew somebody who had a job answering phones, but she was blind, so they allowed her to come in, and they adapted their operating system with the support of blind and visual services, so it's assistive technology.
Okay, I knew it was going to happen. I knew somebody was going to get to an assistive technology example eventually. Excellent. So we just learned something vital, and that is that AT, assistive technology, is only one kind of a whole bunch of reasonable accommodations that are possible. And we haven't even scratched the surface on the reasonable accommodations that are available and out there. I just want to give you a real quick visual example, okay? If I'm somebody who has a visual impairment, and my difficulty is that I have a hard time reading words that are written straight across because my eyes jump and they don't follow the line, okay? A reasonable accommodation that's also viewed as a piece of assistive technology could be as simple as a stiff piece of paper, okay? Because I'm going to take that stiff piece of paper and I'm going to line it up under those words, and then suddenly that's going to eliminate the jumping and I'm going to be able to read that printed text straight across. So a lot of times when people talk about assistive technology, they're thinking computers, software, hardware, all these big expensive things. And I think it's important to realize, especially when you're out there talking to employers or you're in the work setting, that not all reasonable accommodations are expensive. In fact, there's several studies out there that say a lot of reasonable accommodations that people need at work, you know, cost less than $34. Okay? Now, that's not to say that somebody wouldn't need something like a software adaptation that the lady in the back mentioned that might be more expensive, but it's just a matter of educating employers that, hey, it's not all about the cost. You know, sometimes a Ford car will do the job and you don't need a Cadillac to accommodate somebody at work. What do you do if you're somebody who's out there, you're on your first job, and you think you need something to help you out at work? What are your responsibilities in that instance? Okay. Maybe you've never faced that situation before, and you're wondering, what do I need to do? And if there's one thing that I could tell you that I would hope that all of you would take from this workshop, that is that if you're in the job or you're starting the job and you think you need something, don't be afraid to ask for it. And in fact, it's your responsibility to ask for it if you think you need it. And it's your responsibility, even if you know you need something, but you're not quite sure what that something is. Because asking is very empowering. Asking is what puts the employer in a situation where they then need to have a dialogue, a talk with you. They need to sit down with you and try to work out first of all, can we identify what you need in order to do the job? And second of all, can we sit down and identify how we're going to get these things and how we're going to bring them into this work site and make them work for you? Okay? But without that initial asking, the employer might not even know that you need something. Okay? It could be a situation where the employer has never worked with an employee who has a disability. So they might not even know where to start. So remember that you are in charge and you have the power to ask. Okay? Now, once you ask, remember that I said that that is supposed to start a talk, a dialogue between you and the employer. Okay? And actually, the ADA Amendments Act says that that talk has to take place, that dialogue, that interaction. Okay? But we all know what's going to come up as part of that talk. It's going to be, who the heck is going to pay for this reasonable accommodation? Who's going to pay for the assistive technology that I need at work? Okay? And there are a few answers out there that I just want to share. Okay? One program that we've already talked about is the Office of Vocational Rehabilitation, Bureau of Blindness and Visual Services, okay? OVR and BVS. And they are certainly a resource for assistive technology or other accommodations that you might need either in searching for a job, getting a job, or actually advancing in a job that perhaps you already have. So you might wonder, well, how do I connect up with the OVR and BVS agency in my area? Well, there are many, many OVR BVS offices across the state of Pennsylvania, and the one that serves you is going to be determined by the county that you live in. So you can either Google labor and industry and get a list that way, or you can actually go to the Client Assistance Program website, and we have went ahead and posted a list of all the OVR BVS agencies in the state and what areas they serve on our website to try to make it easy for folks. So I'm going to write up our website. Okay, our website is www.equalemployment.org. And if you go on there, you will find a list of all the OVR BVS agencies in your area. Now, I want to talk a little bit about going to OVR BVS and getting services. The first thing you're going to need to do is go through an application process. So I want to be clear that you're not going to walk in the door of your local OVR or BVS and come out with assistive technology or other accommodations. Okay, there is a process, but for those of you who might be Social Security, either SSI or SSDI recipients, you're going to be presumed to be eligible for those services. So you're going to need to provide some documents, some medical records, but it's not going to be too strenuous of a process. And for those who might not be Social Security recipients, that doesn't cut you out. You may still be eligible for OVR BVS services if your disability creates a substantial impediment, a substantial barrier to you becoming employed, keeping your job, or advancing in a job that you already have. A lot of people are very, very surprised to hear that you can actually be working in a job someplace, Giant, Burger King, Wawa, whatever it is, and actually be eligible for OVR services if, you know, the job that you have is nothing more than your job. It's not your career goal. Okay, so that's an important thing to keep in mind. One of the things that I have on my outline to share with you today is information about how to get help if you request assistive technology or other services from OVR, BVS, and they tell you for any reason that they cannot provide what you need. You can call the client assistance program. You can call me, and we will provide advocacy to help you with that. Because as we all know, OVR, blindness and visual services, don't always say yes. And sometimes they're right, and sometimes they're wrong, and somebody from the outside needs to take a look at that. And that's what we do. There are two other assistive technology resources in Pennsylvania that I just want to also talk about, and I'll write those up for you and then talk about them a little bit. Okay, the first program is called PIAT. And I know I'm not supposed to use acronyms, but that is the Pennsylvania Initiative on Assistive Technology. And they actually have what's called a lending library. They have a location at the East, which is housed at Temple University in Philadelphia. And they have a location in the West, which is housed, I believe there's a small one at the Hiram G. Andrews Center, and then also one in Pittsburgh. But what's really cool about PIAT, the Pennsylvania Initiative on Assistive Technology, is that if you're having one of those situations where you know you need something, but you're not really quite sure what that something is, PIAT's lending library will let you check out, so to speak, different pieces of assistive technology and actually take those to your workplace or your volunteer position or whatever it is that you're doing and try them out so you can get a hands-on feel of whether this particular item is going to be right for you. They have all kinds of things there. They have closed-circuit television CCTVs that you can borrow. They have all different kinds of magnification devices. Cassette players for people who are blind or visually impaired. Pretty much, if they have it there, you can check it out and use it. So that's one resource. The other resource is the Pennsylvania Assistive Technology Foundation. And what's great about them is that they offer 0% loans to people who may need to get money to purchase assistive technology. So it's another funding resource that's out there. Now, what I want to do is just have us think about assistive technology in the real world a little bit. And here's how we're going to do that. I have two situations which are made up, but they're based on real life experience. And since our room is nicely divided into this half and this half, I'm going to assign each half of the room to one of these situations, give you a couple minutes to all brainstorm and talk about it amongst yourselves, and then we're going to come back together and talk about what kinds of things that these two working age individuals might be able to do in order to get the assistive technology that they need for their jobs. Okay. So I'm going to speak to this side of the room first and tell you a little bit about your individual. Your individual is my client who's 21 years old and he has graduated from high school. His name is Sam. Sam has a disability, and he needs some speech activation software to help him at his job. But this... Okay, we're having a brief commercial break by a cart. But anyway, this guy, Sam, is at his first job. And he really, really has no idea how to get the speech-activated software he needs or what to do. So I'd like this side of the room to try to come up with at least three things that Sam could do to get the speech-activated software that he needs. Now, for those of you over on this side of the room, you're going to try to help out my other client, whose name for purposes of this exercise is Sarah. Okay? Sarah has actually been out of high school for a little while, and she's been at her job for about 2 years now. But recently, she got a new supervisor, and some of her job responsibilities have changed. And she's actually feeling a little bit unsure as to whether she can do some of the new responsibilities. And she remembers that when she first got the job, she had a job coach. And now she's wondering, could I get that job coach to come back in and help me with learning some of these new functions that have been added on? And she's also kind of been wondering, you know, with all these new functions, I think it's going to be really difficult maybe to keep my day organized. I wonder if there's anything out there that could help me with that. So what I want you guys on this side to think about is, what steps should Sarah take with her employer to get what she needs? Okay? So I see we have about 10 minutes remaining, so I just want you to take maybe 3-4 minutes to kind of consider these two things, and then we're going to regroup, okay? This will also give you a good opportunity to introduce yourself to your neighbors and do some of that networking we were talking about earlier. Okay, you guys, I'm going to ask you to kind of regroup and come back here. This is my lovely assistant, Cheryl, who's volunteered to do some writing for me.
Remember, flip charts do not have spell check.
Right. That's very good. Okay, so first let's talk just a little bit about Sam over here and what ideas you guys may have come up with for Sam. Anybody want to volunteer? Yes, sir. Your microphone is coming.
My first thought was to make a formal request to his employer.
Right. And that's just asking for an accommodation, right? Great. So ask. What else, sir?
Okay. After you ask for the accommodation and the employer tells you whether or not they have that accommodation readily available to them, if not, you want to consider other options and identify, as far as the software you might need, what can you ask for or what's best suited for you.
Okay. So from that, I get a couple things. Talk about the options. I'm also kind of hearing in that, look for other resources that aren't just the employer themselves. And maybe as you identify the resources, you're really also talking about, what can I do to educate my employer about what's out there? Okay. What else?
I think we might want to go to either... I would go to PIOT and see if I could try out some of those programs just to see which worked best for me. And if I needed help training, I'd go to Glenn's organization, who would help train me over here at Centers for Independent Living. And then maybe, what was the name? Assistive Tech Foundation, if I needed a loan, if I couldn't get the money through OBR or for some other agency who would support me.
Well, thank heavens you mentioned OVR, because I sure don't want you going and taking that loan out before you've checked with OVR. Okay. Yes, ma'am.
As a last resort, if you went exhausted all of them, then you could check with the Rotary and the local community service foundations that might be able to loan you your money.
Reach out to the community. Okay, we got some good ideas for Sam, and I see now we have 5 minutes left, and I talk a lot. So now we're going to go over here and talk about Sarah for a minute, because we don't want to leave her out. Now, Sarah's situation was a little different. She'd been in her job for a while, and there were some changes. So what things did you guys come up with that might help Sarah? Well, this side of the room is very quiet now.
Some are similar to Sam, actually. We had said first you would talk to the supervisor and discuss that the new duties she needs help with. Other things that we also discussed was OVR and getting that job coach back.
Mm-hmm.
And third thing, which there might be other ideas in between that our group can discuss, would be for the organization requesting like either a job buddy or a visual to get the jobs in order.
Okay.
What way she would do them.
So talk to the supervisor, get OVR involved to see if you could get the job coach back. And maybe get a job buddy. I like those ideas. Did anybody over here talk at all about any assistive technology that might be helpful to Sarah? Was that discussed over there at all on your side? Yes.
We briefly talked about an organizer, but we didn't really feel that it had to be anything extravagant. It was probably just maybe a binder or something that was posted in the work site that she could refer to. Could be something very inexpensive.
Okay.
For organizer day.
So an organizer. And then if that doesn't work, maybe we might need to go to more other kinds of assistive technology. Okay? These are excellent ideas, and I think that what you've done today is you've started a great discussion about how to get not just assistive technology, but other kinds of reasonable accommodations that you might need at work. I wish I could sit here and talk about these things all day with you, because there's a lot more information that I could share. There's more information in your binder if you want to learn specifically about the ADA Amendments Act, or if you're new to working with OVR or Blindness and Visual Services and you want to get more information about how to deal with that. There is a handout under my tab that deals specifically with that. I have to allow time for you guys to complete a very important evaluation form. And I've actually, I've been given an announcement about that, but I'm going to turn it over to my friendly announcer back there who's going to help you with that.
In your binders, you'll find the evaluation. Now, we would like that, if you could, fill out the entire evaluation. If not, if you could just identify if you receive Social Security services. For those of you that don't have a binder, I do have some evaluations here that I can give you. And when you're finished, if you want to just leave it at the tables, I'll collect it after the session.
And I just want to add one thing while you're filling out your evaluations. Cheryl was kind enough to mention to me another resource, which is the Job Accommodation Network, or JAN, J-A-N. And if you Google them, they will come right up on the first page, I guarantee it. Yes, ma'am. Oh, my. Now I have pain. Agony. Okay, this could be Wait a minute here. This could be a whole other workshop, which I'm not authorized to provide, but I'm going to tell you this. If anybody's being told that OVR is not going to step in until you're 21 or anything that's similar to that, just make sure you call me at the office, because that is not true. They like to say that, but that's not the law. Oh, yes, they will. Oh, yes. They don't want to see me coming.